Welcome to Create Your Bliss with Nika Annan. Today we have the wonderful opportunity to talk to Margaret DeWiss, who is the author of several books, Black Smoke, Ecstatic Trance. She has an amazing life story of journeying around the world, the physical world, the spiritual world as well. Welcome, Margaret. Thank you for talking to us today.
Nika, it is my pleasure. Yes, traveling around the world is an extraordinary opportunity that I've been blessed with, to work with Aboriginal people, Indigenous people, people of ancient knowledge that know the true ways.
Yes, I haven't lost them the way we have in much of dominant culture.
Exactly.
It's very precious that you have put this time and energy into not just bringing this information to us, but reflecting back to people the exquisite beauty of those traditions and the value of what they bring to the world. And as difficult as their daily lives may be, how blessed their spiritual lives are.
Indeed. Yes, the old knowledge is getting lost, at least on the physical plane, because the elders are dying out, and a lot of their children in the Amazon jungle want tennis shoes, they want radio, they want to go to the big city. They don't want to do the old stuff. And so for me, it seemed imperative because of my burning desire to know and to learn, that I go. And so one of my first trips was to, one of my first big, very big trips was to the high upper Amazon in Ecuador to work with the Shuar, Pueblos, the people, the Shuar mm-hmm. people. Their medicine high holy men are called Uishans. And the Uishan has medical, magical knowledge, knowledge of the beginning of creation of the stars. It's really interesting because the old ones will tell you stories about going to the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes, it's amazing.
Inside the sun and talking to the sun beings. And so in different cultures, in Africa or maybe Bali, I hear some of the same stories because they travel throughout the planetary spheres. They and they know different beings from different cultures outside of our solar system even. And the learning goes back tens and tens of thousands of years from very, very highly intelligent, loving planetary solar beings.
I think that there is, and there is a level there of acknowledgement in this whole process of healing and talking to spirits, plants, planetary beings, of how much love is a coherent and a cohesive factor in the multiverse, how that is the energy of relationship and compassion in relationship is really a dominant note.
That is true. That is, yeah, there's just so much extraordinary beauty in the universe, and it's perfect. It's perfect. And sometimes as human beings, we forget perfection and we end up living inside of our chattering heads, and we miss the moment, the present, and the absolute beauty. That's what I think. That sometimes certainly happens to me, and I catch myself and I go, oh yes, let's be awake again.
Let's go back to what's here.
Asleep for a minute. Oh dear, or several hours. Yeah.
And how precious the world. So tell us about this journey. I understand that you were not well when you went to Ecuador and you got invited or commanded.
Yes, I was remanded into the hands of magic and mystery. I was sick with something that I do not name because name gives it power.
Mm-hmm.
But it starts with the C. A lot of people are having this problem daily because of our environment. This was about 15 years ago, and the doctors wanted to do radiation and surgery and all these therapies. And I kind of didn't feel right for me.
Mm-hmm.
There was something gnawing on me. And as I was pondering, I ran into someone that said that there was going to be a big Mayan Choltun where 500 healers from all of the Americas would get together and do ritual. And the Choltun is the 13-year transition before 2012. The prophecies were written before 500 years, but it specified exactly how everything was to take place, and someone from all of the races had to be present. And there were a few, you know, a half dozen or so white people invited, and there was one place left. Did I want to go?
Oh, what a blessing.
It was, the Maya are just the most beautiful people. Truly, truly, truly beautiful and wise. They know the old knowledge. So I went, and I was sick at the time, and I kept saying, I think I'm going to find a healer here. And I would look at someone from the Utes or Cheyenne or Wototo in Colombia. Mm-hmm. Yes, this person could do it. That person could do it. And no one knew I was sick. And then an Amazonian came up to me, and he said, I can see inside your body. You have black smoke coming out. And he pointed where it was on me, and he said, if you come to the Amazon jungle, I will heal you. And I said, well, how can you see what this is? And he said, your body is like a clear drinking glass. I can see your veins, your arteries, your organs. Come, and I will heal you. So I decided that I would go.
That must have been a rather extraordinary thing to hear.
Life can be very extraordinary.
Yeah, enticing, but also, yeah.
Yeah. Yes, my friends and family didn't think it was such a wise idea, but nevertheless, I was 100% certain, without a doubt, that that was what I needed to do, and I did it. So, and so my book, Black Smoke, details the journey from getting off the plane, getting kind of lost in the jungle in the dead of night with crocodiles on either side of the lagoon, through so many kind of preparatory experiences that I had with the Uwishin, where he was purifying me and cleansing me, he said, for the Red Road. Uh-huh. The road of the warrior. One thing that I can tell all people is with healing, the warrior in you must come. You are responsible and you must take charge of your own healing in the way that you can, if that is getting the best advice and following diligently with the one focus in your mind to get well. At one point, I was buried in the earth. There were several initiatory, extraordinary experiences. And we used this sacred medicine called Natem.
Mm-hmm.
The Quechua call it ayahuasca, mm-hmm. but the Shuar do not because it's a different medicine the way that they use it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the I called it the holy terror because it was quite holy and it was terrifying at the same time. But there was a certain point that you'll see in the book where I begin to do healing work with the Uishin, and he tells me that I'm cured.
And puts you right to work.
He puts me right to work. I was ecstatic. I mean, because there's a certain kind of exhaustion living in the jungle with mud up to your thighs and, you know, peeing in the bush and getting clean in the river and staying up sometimes for days and days on end. It's exhilarating, and it's also very, very, very demanding. But it I rose to the occasion. I felt the real beauty of nature because the people in the jungle, they say, I am not speaking. It is all of the trees, the water, the plains, everything is speaking through my body. I am one with the earth. The earth is one with me. And the other thing that's so incredibly beautiful is the knowledge, these absolute libraries held in the heads of spiritual masters, that they don't read books, they don't have books, they don't need books, because it's all in the mind, and they will pass the information along. Unfortunately, so much is not written down. I mean, it's fortunate, but it's unfortunate because as northern, western, muy civilizado, us people that are so civilized, you know, it's hard to even remember three words with the computer and to know that this knowledge exists and not to be able to access it is, I think it's a tragedy. So,
yeah, and to also really value the preciousness of the fact that it's there and the dedication it takes to transfer it and to receive it.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, there's so, as you know, in the healing arts, there's so much love. There's so much pureness that comes through a being who is an individual that takes care of all, that takes care of the animals, the plants, the humans around them. It's a glorious way to live. It doesn't necessarily bring lots of money or cars or, you know,
no, but it brings
insurance policies. However,
a different level of well-being.
Yes, it's a different level of immortality that cannot be measured by the standards that we have in our society.
I was really struck when you just said that about the amount of love that the healers bring, because in the early part of your book, there's a bit where you talk about the things that are within you that are part of being ill. And causality is not usually that relevant, but that, and one of the things that you mentioned besides fear is the calcification of love. And I was really struck by that and how we can limit our vitality through the calcification of love.
Absolutely. Life, the life force, is a vital force. Our consciousness is vital. And so many times we easily find ourselves imprisoned in a certain kind of way with our belief systems or a certain kind of knowledge that does not allow us to love fully or to be free or to cross the street without having, you know, the total fear of being hit by a car. I don't, you know, there's...
Yes, the distractions from moving back into our hearts.
And those layers are rigid. They calcify. They keep free movement. The love of life, they imprison the love of life. And in terms of sickness, I mean, there's so many different reasons that one gets sick. I mean, we are physical bodies and we are going to return to the earth, the physical part of us. But the spiritual, the soul of us is immortal. And so, but the possibility of living a full, healthy life until one is 90 or 100 and then leaving to go back to the spirit realm for a stay is absolutely apropos. And sometimes crises are a way of waking the soul, allowing, saying, hey, you in there, you know, wake up a little bit. There's something bigger going on here in the multiverse, as you called it. And I want you to be aware. I want you to learn while you're here on Earth.
Which is such an amazing place. I mean, when we look around and our culture has so limited what we allow ourselves to perceive. And one of the things that was struck in your book is that whole opening, the different levels of perception. Like your discussion about the jaguars in many different places in the book, about how those spirit beings can be very present and we interact with them from other senses than the officially sanctioned ones. I don't know how else to say that, but...
Right. Well, we have... and I learned this, actually, from the Uish, and he said we have five physical senses, and we have five non-physical senses. And so we have a discussion in the book, and I'm like, well, how do you get to these non-physical senses? And it's really interesting, because... that was maybe 15 years ago or so, and for me, that has been a primary beautiful interest in what I do, because the physical senses are very good for walking around, putting your shoes on, getting in the car, but for just about everything else, those other, the non-physical ones will take you free and far and give you the information and the intelligence you need to be a fully integrated being while in a body.
Yeah, and that it is I think it's work for us in this culture to acknowledge them and to even suspend disbelief about the information that we get from them. It's one of the things that I have learned through the process of my life is that to be really specific with language, because sometimes people, I don't quite know how to say this, but they're not aware of those five senses, so trying to talk to them about the information that comes from them, we use the waking dream, we use some language, but it's difficult to find a language that brings it into this reality.
It's kind of a show me kind of thing, I think.
Yes.
Show me. You know, I mean, I have a small group of people that I work with, and it's kind of like learn telepathy in a way, you know, but it's basically, you know, you feel it. You don't use your mind. It's not the thinking mind. It's feeling it, and those feelings will bring up imagery. And we did something, I think Villoldo originally brought this to light, is called Bringing Down the Jaguar. Do you know this one?
I don't know this one.
Well, actually, it's so many people, their bodies are out of sync with the earth. They're on that fight or flight. Right. That, you know, they can't get off of it. They're anxious or whatever. So you put your hand under the heart. They're lying down, and you start talking to the jaguar in the top of the tree. And you say, "Oh, it's okay. I love you so much. You're such a beautiful animal. I am here for you," and so on. And you ask the jaguar, or you ask the beat that you're feeling through the body to resonate with the earth, and you get the boom, 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 you know, you get the 7.8 hertz or whatever the hertz is at that time. And once that's established, you go down to the sacral area and you ask the jaguar to come down from the tree and you say, oh, it's going to be so beautiful. You're absolutely safe and completely loved. And so after coaxing, and this is all, of course, telepathically, the jaguar comes down from the tree, and then the beating of the heart and the sacrum are put into service to one another so that they're beating in tandem. And then that's also beating with the earth, and it's over. Okay. And it's phenomenal. You can take just about anybody and tell them to do this to another person, and it resets the fight or flight, you know. I mean, it's like animals. They'll right. go running through the field. A lion will come after them. They'll right. excited. And then you'll see them a minute later, you know, relaxing over by, you know, it's over. But Americans or human beings tend to hold on to that stuff. And so you say, okay, this is how you do it. And then you explain to the person that's done it to the other person, since you were talking silently, you were speaking telepathically to this person.
Uh-huh.
And then they feel what's happening in their hands. So this is not the five senses at all. It just isn't.
Right. It's a whole different level of information that's there in the universe for us to be aware of and open to.
Yeah. And I love it. And they love it that they can bring people into balance, you know. There's so many things like that are so wonderful. And then, you know, because people are taught, oh, there is no telepathy, or there's no this, or there's no that. But once you show them, then they have to go, yeah, that's telepathy, all right.
Right, and that they begin to understand that it's about other levels of communication that are perhaps not rational that we all live in. It's like attraction. It's like you can walk in to a room and sense who you're going to connect with and who you're not going to connect with. Or even this man walked up to you and said, hey, I need, you know, we're meant to be connected.
Yeah, and I agreed. I agree. Yeah, this is absolutely true. I mean, you can always tell if there's someone behind you. You feel the energy. Exactly. You walk into a room and you can tell if somebody's just had a blowout, you know, mm-hmm. 'cause that anger is flying left and mm-hmm. right. So that's the very rudimentary stage of allowing people to see, to feel. And it's all about feeling. It's not about talking to yourself. You know, it's not about saying, okay, now, you know, I'm going to go into another dimension and I'm going to do this. And no, it's about feeling your way there. And maybe that disconnect from the body that so many of us have is also another indication that we can do so much more when we're present in our physical beings and feeling our way through. I remember the Toltecs, when I was studying with them, they were always saying, you feel, it's the feeling, it's the that takes you to the next place. And it's true.
That's the driver.
Yeah. It focuses your attention and your intent, the feeling. Yeah, it's the driver, for sure.
And that leads me into the role of chant and music and drumming and rattle and song in ceremony and in healing, because that's a very strong way of carrying the feeling and of shaping the feeling and of unifying feeling. I mean, I know here in the Pueblo that the beat of the drum is the beat of the heart of the Pueblo.
Mm-hmm.
And then that the songs carry the information, but not, again, in an intellectual way, but the song has the music and the words in a way that I think reaches us differently. It engages those other senses.
That is, yeah, that's true. And the even most beautiful thing is that it's reaching us, but it's also reaching up to the spirits. Mm. Because the spirit, as you know, the spirit has a song that calls it. And you can actually see at some point where the line is moving through space, and it's calling them down. Mm-hmm. And it's also calling the human to be aligned with this flow. I see it as kind of this beautiful waving line, and then boom, there's a connection. Mm-hmm. It's inviolable. It's just strong. It's the attachment of the spirit with the soul and the physical body. The chanting, a lot of it will call the spirits, and it also physiologically prepares the physical body so that in my case perhaps, or others, that a possession could take place, or that the I guess I'll call it supramind, the soul, mm-hmm. high self, is in connection with the large picture of the world, in which case it is able to absorb information from the cosmos, from the beings, from those who are called the ancient ones. And the ancient ones are very, very particular.
Yes.
About how they would like to be called and what one should do for them.
There is an etiquette.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, there's an etiquette. And, you know, I think of, I work a lot in, or I have in the past, with voodoo, mm-hmm. and candomblé and umbanda. And the music, the minute the music comes on, that spirit, that god, knows, and it comes. And they have also these beautiful veves on the ground, these drawings that also attract the spirits. And each one likes a different kind of food, or a different kind of flower, or a different kind of smell. you know, so they come because you know what they like, and you ask them, and they want to be with you, and you want to be with them, and you honor them.
Yes. So I have a couple of questions out of that. You said that the song helps prepare the body physiologically. Can you talk? Is that like making it receptive or aligning us to be open?
I think it's receptive. There's a certain kind of alignment. I know mm-hmm. that there's our autonomic system, mm-hmm. which is the one that helps us breathe and keeps the stomach moving, the one that we're not aware of, the one that's involuntary,
right.
that connects directly to spirit. And it's almost like, okay, they're sending in all the beautiful electron juice, and it's kind of an alignment. I know this is very
scientific.
It's not scientific, but the autonomic nervous system gets aligned. And of course, you know, the beat of the earth, the resonance is usually around 8 hertz or a little less, depending on where you are. And the body aligns with that. There's an alignment. I think it goes into atomic alignment because the atoms themselves, the cells, resonate. And when you get everything resonating in union with something of such grand proportion, you can call it physiological too.
Yeah, that is. But the resonance is there, and it's part of I don't know, the vibrancy of life.
I would love to ask you how that works in the Pueblo work that you do.
So what song is for there? Is it? It is a way of creating the container, and it takes you into what we call in this culture trance, which I think is maybe just a differently differentiated reality where those other senses are as accessible, if not more so. Than what we think of as, you know, to switch call as ego or self. That's not a very important part. That it is the, it's what weaves us together.
You know, in astral projection or projection, the senses are all there. There's no body. But they're 360 degree vision. Hey,
and you can feel temperature, and you feel the sensation of flying, and
exactly, and you know, you can be someplace instantaneously. Yeah, and that, you know, I mean, for people that don't really know, I would consider them learning projection, because once you're out of your body and you know that you can see and you can go wherever you want and you can think and feel and you're you but without a body, that's a pretty strong indication that these other senses, which are heightened, I mean, even the color is heightened, there's your proof. You know, I mean, maybe the laboratory is not going to find anything, but you're going to know.
Right, and you can experience it. So do you have some suggestions about how people can do that? And I wanted to follow up. You had mentioned possession, and I was really interested in having you talk about that and what role that plays and the experiences in that. What is...
possession... is really extraordinary. You know, I learned a lot about that when I was spending time in Brazil. I've been working as a medium for John of God for, I don't know, 14 years or so. And
are you still? Is that one of the things?
Yes, you said? Oh, yeah, wow, I still do that, yeah. So that became very interesting to me. And also in the Amazon, in Ecuador, and in Brazil, I'd seen exorcisms of kind of the kind of possession that they show on, you know, the movies. You know, but the possession that I'm interested in has always been to work with the Loas or the Orishas, where the God comes into the body and takes over. It's an incredibly beautiful feeling. It's like having the most glorious aspect of the universe in your domain. It's so invigorating. It's different than channeling. I don't really know that much about channeling. But these are deities, I mean, or even the certain spirits that are in the Amazon that are ancient, and they come back time and again. You know, one will be a forest entity, or one will be for sweet water or for the ocean, and they have domain over the earth, and they have a wisdom, and... they're very powerful. I mean, the interesting thing is, like, 100, 1,000 people could be possessed by one entity, because you take just a small spark of that wonderfully powerful energy, and it brings the community together. People that are not possessed or are in the ceremony or the ritual can be healed. There's all sorts of healing and community relation, binding of a beautiful nature that happens. I think one of the first times I was possessed, João did a physical operation on me, John of God. Mm-hmm. And he'll take a knife, for people that don't know, and he'll cut into the body, pull out a tumor or do whatever he does and sew it up with a stitch without anesthesia or antiseptic. And there's very little blood. You actually don't feel it. Mm-hmm. But that first time he did that to me, he walked up to me and he stuck his thumb in my eye. And boom! I was out of my body. I couldn't really tell where I was.
Uh-huh.
But I was not in my physical body. And I could feel, you know, the operation, the pressure on my body. I could feel all of that. Not as a pain, because it's hard to describe, but at that particular time, I was in the spirit world for about 7 days.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I was taken to a lot of different places, and it was pretty amazing. And that's wonderful to go to these different worlds. I mean,
so what can you describe those places a little bit? What that's like for people for whom this is not familiar?
Usually, it's spectacular in all ways. Physiologically, you're not in your body. Your mind is traveling sometimes to terrains that may not even be on the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And you're spoken to, you learn certain things, but it's not really by talking. It's more like picture showing, or they'll show you an image. Like there was one image where these eight beings that were amorphous, you know, you could see through them. They told me, I was in the desert, and they mm-hmm. told me to lie in a ditch.
Mm-hmm.
And they put their hands like belts all up and down my body. And they said, do not move one hair because we cannot protect you thereafter. And these giant spiders came over. And it was a very intense, extraordinary experience. That's in my second book, Ecstatic Healing. But they told me that something was coming.
Mm-hmm.
Something which, you know, in my mind, and the fact that I needed such strong protection was going to be pretty devastating.
Right.
And then they said, but, you know, go through this. Don't fear. Mm-hmm. You're not going to die.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think when they take you places, it's not, you know, to go like to Disney World. It's like there's a real meaning to it.
Right, know? Right. That there's a journey and a lesson.
Yeah, at least, you know, very personal for me.
So how do you integrate that experience then when you come back into your being? Because it sounds to me that your life is very whole in that way, and so you have integrated that. So what is that process like?
I think that process takes years.
Mm-hmm.
Because when, you know, 15 years ago, it was very difficult. I mean, it was difficult for me living, because I stayed in the Amazon and studied with the Uishin and I still, you know, I had an apartment down there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was, you know, South America is very different than North America. Friends are different, the way people think.
Yes.
So it's like changing hemispheres. And I would come back to, I live in New York State, upstate in the country. And I had a very hard time in the beginning trying to, like, put my head around what I had really learned and why I was writing checks in the checkbook. I just
like, how does this fit?
Oh my God! You know, or scrubbing out the toilet. I mean, it's not, it's just like, oh my God, you know. So, but it took a long time.
Right, to integrate.
You know, because, you know, some people, they were born to this, and other people, they, you know, find it later on in life, in a sense. So it took me a very long time. I honestly don't think I have, I'm not confused or, you know, disoriented anymore.
Yeah.
You know.
But there is a period of that when you're trying to track which, especially when you come back from a culture like that into, you talk in your book about coming home from Ecuador into your family life and how you couldn't share what you had experienced at a profound level.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. And I mean, you know, the visions that I had when I was in Ecuador and, you know, seeing spirits. And there were all sorts of things that were phenomenally non-physical and extraordinary. And because the nature of what they were, I believed to be true, and I even more so now, mm-hmm. it made the sense of the entire world as a 3D world that we all kind of know very precariously odd, because it just didn't jive with what, you know, the West is always telling us it is. It's just not that way. So that made it difficult. I mean, you know, like I would like be a little kind of spaced out and back the car up into a pole, you know.
Right.
It's like, oh no, that cost $800. Oh.
Right, and then
I'm done with, I mean, thankfully, but it's a journey. I mean, you know, you pay for all your lessons, and I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean it in, there's always an exchange.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah, because, well, it keeps the energy flowing.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, like, possession, like, his name is Juan in the paperback version of Black Smoke.
Mm-hmm.
His father named him, you know, God of the Black Jaguars.
Mm-hmm.
And so before breast milk, he had ayahuasca because they knew he was going to be a great healer.
Wow.
And so he was trained from the minute he was born, basically. And oh, I forgot where I was going to go with that. And
you were talking about possession and
yes, oh yes. And so he there are certain deities and beings that come while he's doing healing, and one of them is a black jaguar, and I could see it when it comes, and it's huge and it's ferocious. It has these giant claws. And, you know, it's like growling, and it goes right in there, like to a tumor, you know, and it rips it out, and then, boom, it's gone. And, you know, I talked to Juan about that, and he said, oh, you know, that one just wants to tear everything apart, you know, to get as soon as possible. But you know, and you're there, you know, during healing ceremonies, and you see this, like, gazillion foot high doctor spirit, you know, come and do these amazing things. There was Tibetans that would come. I mean, it was like really, and beautiful, beautiful, beautiful work, okay? Beautiful work and so loving. But, you know, I mean, everything has a purpose. A jaguar has a purpose. And it's the best it's the best tool for certain things.
Yes, and I think that's one of the things that's in all that knowledge is that there is that whole range of tools, and there's a different sense of judgment, too. It's like, what's appropriate in this situation? Not, oh, that's a bad thing and this is a good thing, but what's the imbalance and how do we right it? And is it, you know, sometimes gentleness doesn't heal it, sometimes harshness doesn't heal, you know, you have to find the right, the matching energy to move.
Indeed, and in the sense of Juan, they would show up as needed. you know, and he was a different person because I always assisted him, and I could tell when different spirits were in him, and they go, do this, do that, bam, bam, bam.
Oh, and they're very bossy. I love them.
Yeah,
they're so
bossy. Very bossy and really like 10,000 times faster than a human being. Okay? Right? Am I right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, I want to hear about your adventures in the healing realm with the different beings.
Another time.
Hey, that would be great. Let's do it.
I would love that. So I also wanted to ask you about the time that you're spending in Africa and how you got, and was there a bridge between Brazil? And is that part of what took you to Africa? And what's there? You mentioned being a Sangoma.
He's the High Sanusi Vuzamazulu Kreno Mutua, who is known as, in many circles, as the father of Africa. Mm-hmm. It turns out that way before I even went to Ecuador, about 10 years before that, I was in a ceremony, and someone had brought these ancient items and did a ritual. And he took a group of beads and moved them around. There were about 15 people, and asked people to touch them. And the minute that I touched the beads, I started like shaking and frothing at the mouth. And, you know, my eyes were bulging. And somewhere in the periphery, I could see everybody's mouth hanging open. What is going on here? And the guy said, hold on to the energy. Hold it. Take it in, you know. And afterwards, I said, whose are those? And it turned out it was Vuzamazulu's. And that night, he came to me in a dream, and he said, come to South Africa. And it took me, I had to go through many countries before I could get there. But that's what took me to him. And it turns out that the people that I was working with in Brazil were originally from Mozambique. And so I was at this place on the border of Mozambique, and the stories that I had learned in Portuguese and the old Zulu and Xhosa stories came together in this most extraordinary event for me, and it was very, very beautiful. I think that was a special trip for me. And that I write about in Ecstatic Healing, because that book pretty much is all about spirit possession.
So you had mentioned when we were talking before, we have a dear friend in common, who is Felicitas Goodman. So how was her knowledge useful to you, and what did you guys share?
Her knowledge, I did a number of postures with her. This was, God, in the early 90s, I believe. And it was a small group of people in upstate New York. And as you know, or people that know her work, she discovered ritual postures that if you stand in them for 15 minutes and there's a rattle or a continuous drum beat at a certain frequency or a certain speed, will put you into a trance. So she would, probably you did this with her, but she would say, okay, let's get in this posture. And 15 minutes later, we would come out. And, you know, I went to the Olmec culture. I went to Siberia. Nobody knew what the postures were for, but when we came out, we were all in the same place. And one woman would say, did you see that black raven that flying around? And I said, yes. And, you know, people...
Right.
Yeah, so she takes people to ancient sites through these ritual postures. And, you know, I've gone back 40,000 years to different communities and civilizations, and you learn a lot. So that's what she did for me. I think she's a beautiful, most extraordinary being. And I hope that, I'm sure she's blessing everyone in the Pueblo today as we speak.
Oh, I'm sure she shares that. Yeah, it's a very, because I think it connects us to those realms that we have. We did a trance with her once, and we were doing a tinglet posture. And as everybody at the end of the group told their vision, what experience they had had, by the end of the session, we had told the story of Raven stole fire from the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody had the whole piece, but everybody got their piece.
Yeah, it's beautiful. She's beautiful. She found her way into the dimensional world where all great knowledge lies. Yeah. Especially, I think, for human beings, like where we came from and what we're here to do. The great elders, the ancient ones, speak to us.
They do, and they're so willing to share information. And I will share a little bit. One of the most important things, it's a very interesting experience for me, but I did notice something that was resonated with your book. One of several, if not a number of my most powerful spontaneous visitations from the spirit world were when I was cleaning up the sacred site. There were fishing lines and garbage, and so I'd get up early in the morning and go down and clean it up. And the spirits would show up and start patting my cheeks. And then they'd start laughing and talking and share amazing information. And that was such a gift to me, to find that by doing something that simple, that they showed up in a very different way than with petition. That if I was taking care of their place, that the tenderness and the spontaneity was very different than a formalized meeting.
Yes, because you become their priestess.
Mm.
Maybe right. There's a different term you use, but you become.
I don't know. Yeah, I felt like they're baby, you know.
Baby and the priestess on earth. It's, yes. And they love, I'm thinking of the African tradition. They love to come down and be in a body and dance around. You know, they like that. They like the beautiful, delicious foods that they remember. They like the sharing.
They do. They're very benevolent. You know, they love sharing information, even powerful and demanding, but benevolent and wise and willing to share. You know, some of them are more curmudgeonly than others, but all of them are willing to share. You know, if you show up with a good heart. Which leads me to something else I didn't know I was going to ask you about, but you do mention the whole process of purging and fasting and preparing ourselves for that. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. That is not indicative only of South America, the Amazon, but purging is a very important thing. When I had to drink, literally gallons of this stuff that makes you throw up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. And then the healer explained to me that it takes out bilious bile, that's what we call it, and viruses and bacteria, but it also prepares the body, when the toxins are released, it prepares the body to take in a new pattern, a new vibration, because toxins will keep things from flowing freely. And also, one thing that I found, because some of the things were so difficult for me as a Westerner in the beginning, was that a lot of emotions get trapped in the cells in the body, and that will actually come up during these purifications and purging. It sets a template that's cleaner to take in new information, it's not easy, but I got, you know, it's like I finally got it. And so when we were working on other people, I was, it's seemingly just as hard on them because I knew they had to get cleaned up before they could get the new information. Purging, yeah, in South Africa, oh my goodness, I swear the purging was almost the same as in the Amazon jungle, what they would do. And then I started looking at different cultures, and there's some wide information around the entire earth, and it turns out to be the same kind of information. You know, some of the herbs are a little bit different because it's a different land, but cleaning before taking on Holy Spirit, if I might use that word, mm-hmm. is imperative.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And then after we've taken them on, so you do the process of and the preparation, and you take them on, and it's a beautiful experience. And then how do we separate back? How do we let them, how do you separate them, send them home? What were your experiences with that?
You mean sending spirits home?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sending spirits home. Well, yeah. Always, everything I think I've ever done has been ritualized
mm-hmm.
or ceremonial. So you always open
mm-hmm.
a ceremony and invite. And then there's a participation, and you must always close the ceremony and send them home. And the closing of the ceremony closes the veil. It closes the dimensions. It closes the physical body so that it can be regrounded, I suppose. I don't know. So basically it was a prayer, a thankful prayer, and an official closing of the ceremony with certain words that were spoken and perhaps some music.
And that was the transition back into?
The transition, the transition was fine.
Yeah.
As long as you're staying in the jungle, if you're flying right away, it's like, and then you end up in New York City. It's like,
where am I?
Yeah.
So we're reaching the end of our time. I can't believe it. It's been a fabulous conversation. So could you please talk about your books, if you're doing any travel or anything, your website, how people can find out more about you?
Sure. My first book, which is about the Amazonian jungle, is called Black Smoke, and it's with Inner Traditions. It's in paperback now. My second book is called Ecstatic Healing, and it's Spirit Possession. That is also with Inner Traditions. Those books can be purchased on the Inner Traditions site or Amazon, as it were. My website is called blacksmokethebook.com, where you can see both books. You can listen to some audio, chanting during a healing ceremony in the Amazon. There's interviews there. For years, I've been taking tours to South America for people for healing or spiritual enlightenment. I don't have any trips at present, but that could change because I have some people asking to go down there. So it's blacksmokethebook.com, and you can write to me. My contact is there too.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing this wonderful journey. Yeah, on many levels, you journey many different realities. Again, thank you again, Margaret Weiss, for talking
to us. Thank you, Nika. Weiss.